For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry. General Motors is refurbishing its Bowling Green production facility in preparation for building the next generation Corvette.
What I can tell you is that every generation of Corvette's been very exciting, and this will be no exception. The car is uniquely Corvette, but it's all new, so we're very, very excited about it.
The model design is under wraps, and Bowling Green plant manager Dave Tatum jokingly says secrecy around the new car rivals that of Apple. Employee John Andrews leads a hard hat tour of the assembly room.
You're getting one of the rare glimpses behind that plywood wall that we just walked past. We talk about not wanting to discuss product. We're still doing tours, but we've got to keep this activity and that activity separated, which is what we're using the plywood wall to help us to do.
The plant is making a $131 million investment and adding about 250 jobs. Getting to this point was a rocky road, paved with good intentions, but no guarantees.
You know, as you know, General Motors underwent the largest industrial bankruptcy in the history of the country. Not only do we not know if we'd have a job, we didn't know if we'd have a company.
Both over the age of 40, Keith and Christy Hagwood from White House, Tennessee, were shocked to find out last year they were expecting a fourth child.
Having a set of twins the second time around, it was quite shocking to find out when they are 10 and a half, and our oldest daughter is 14 and a half, to be having a baby.
The bigger shock came on February 6th of this year when Christy gave birth to Andrew Preston Hagwood.
You just delivered a baby and then you're laying there. A cardiologist walked in and said, "Your baby has a really bad heart defect and we're not sure if he's going to make it."
Andrew was born with an enlarged heart, and according to doctors, his only chance of survival would be a transplant. Dr. Brett Mettler is a pediatric surgeon and director of cardiac transplantation at Vanderbilt.
Their brains are very fragile, so we worry about strokes or bleeds in their brain. Long term, we worry about infection.
After 7 weeks, the Hagwood family finally got the news they had been waiting for. A heart was available for Andrew. Andrew's family doesn't know much about the donor family, other than the heart came from out of state and from a baby less than a year old. Again, Dr. Brett Mettler.
It's hard, and I only sympathize with these families, but it's be very challenging to decide to donate or not to donate their organs.
A few days after the successful transplant, Christy Hagwood finally got the chance at something long overdue.
Our first real hold of getting the rocking in a rocking chair, I thought I would cry through it, and I just couldn't quit smiling.
Look at yourself in the mirror. Who's that handsome guy?
Huh? Now at 10 weeks, Andrew remains in the neonatal intensive care unit at Vanderbilt. His prognosis is good. Before long, Andrew will go home with his family to White House, Tennessee. He'll grow, play, learn, and live, all because of unselfish strangers to whom Andrew's family is forever grateful.
I think about him a lot because I would be praying over Andrew, and I would think about that mom praying over her child dying too, because at that moment, you know, our worlds were the same.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Lisa Autry for WKU Public Radio. A Fort Campbell soldier goes on trial this week in military court for the murders of two women in central Kentucky. Brent Burke faces a general court-martial, the most serious level of military courts. He's charged in the murders of his estranged wife, Tracy, and her former mother-in-law, Karen Comer. Both women were found shot to death at Comer's Ronnieville home in 2007. This is the 911 call placed by one of Tracy Burke's three children who were inside the home.
911.
Somebody broke into our house last night, and I don't know who it was, but they killed everybody here except for my sister, my brother, and me.
Okay, and what happened now?
There was a guy with a pistol or some kind of gun, and he came in and shot my mother and my grandma. Those were the only ones here.
The military policeman has been on civilian trial four times. Two of them ended with a hung jury and two in mistrials. Prosecutors coped with a lack of physical evidence and last year decided to dismiss the charges. Brent Burke's freedom was short-lived. Weeks later, the Army charged him in the murders and he was back behind bars. Eugene Fidel teaches military justice at Yale Law School. He says cases like this are uncommon, but constitutional.
For many people, this rubs you the wrong way, because we all know about double jeopardy and how you can't be tried more than once for the same crime.
Good evening and welcome to the first and only vice presidential
for
debate.
For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry.
Commission on Presidential Debates. I'm Martha Raddatz of ABC News, and I am.
If the past is any indication, tonight's third and final presidential debate will be a big hit on social media. Until recently, debate watchers would have waited through the entire 90-minute broadcast to hear analysis from a small cadre of television pundits. But social media has given voice to a wider audience that can offer reaction long before candidates reach their closing statements. Adam Sharp is head of government and news for Twitter.
What's great about this is it's almost a return to the old way of watching television, when you would gather your family and friends on the couch and watch the debate together. But now that couch is huge and fits millions and millions of people to share this experience at the same time and talk about it. And we're able to measure those moments when people are reaching to the person next to them and saying, hey, did you see that? And here's what I think about it.
Twitter had a tent set up outside the debate hall during the October 11th vice presidential debate at Center College in Danville. Sharp had his eyes fixated on three large projection screens tracking comments before and after the showdown between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan. Google also pitched a tent and was tracking minute-by-minute search interest around both candidates.
Joe Biden's search volume is lower on average than Paul Ryan. Now, that could be because people feel like they already know Joe Biden. There's not a lot new necessarily. But we certainly see a lot of peaks related to comments that Paul Ryan makes, whether it's about gay marriage or it's about his plans with Medicare.
Daniel Seberg is the politics and elections spokesman for Google.
It's sort of the dual screen generation where you've got your television, but you've also got your laptop or your tablet or your smartphone.
In the 2008 presidential election, all four debates combined generated 500,000 tweets. Jump ahead 4 years to see the growth in social media. This year's first presidential debate alone produced more than 10 million comments. Last week's debate was the top political event of all time in social media. Women dominated the social media conversation about the debate. Some 54% of all the comments came from women and 46% from men. Google's Daniel Seberg says it's like taking the pulse of the internet.
You know, it's what people are curious about, it what piques their interest.
Old media isn't dead, but more people are engaged because of new media. Watching a debate on TV is now only half the show. I'm Lisa Autry for WKU Public Radio.
For WKU Public Radio, I'm Joe Corcoran. Center College in Danville, Kentucky was the center of the political world last night for the first and only vice presidential debate before the election. So who won? Well, it depends on who you ask. Lisa Autry was in Spin Alley and got reaction from Kentucky's political pundits.
It sounded like a call to the gate, but the bugler for Churchill Downs, in effect, issued a call to the stage. Vice President Joe Biden and Republican challenger Paul Ryan met in their first and only debate at Center College in Danville. And with that, the candidates were off to squabble over the economy, taxes, Medicare, and foreign policy. The 90-minute face-off was fast-moving and feisty. Ask how the candidates performed, and the answers fell among party lines. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said Paul Ryan succeeded in what he needed to do.
Absolutely. There's nobody in Congress smarter than Paul Ryan. He pointed out this is an election that's a very big choice for the American people. And I thought the vice president constantly interrupting and talking over Paul Ryan's answers showed a sense of desperation and a desire to kind of reinvigorate the base after the disaster of last week.
Democrats, on the other hand, including Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway, cheered the vice president's sharp tone.
I think he brought the fight tonight, which is what he needed to do. I think a lot of Democrats wanted someone to get up and point out when records were being distorted or somehow they were being less than candid.
The vice presidential contenders are now one and done, but it's still game on as President Obama and Governor Romney meet again next Tuesday. I'm Lisa Autry for WKU Public Radio.